Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Well, Wojo said after his post-game press conference on Saturday, if the pitchforks and the fire are going to come out, then do what you have to do. Well, we're going to do what we have to do. Welcome into a therapeutic edition of Scrambled Eggs, everyone. Your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. I'm Joe McCann. Phil Bush is here. And Phil, that was not a good week. Not at all.
Yeah, let the day drinking start. I've got a coconut porter here with me, and we're going to need to get past this.
Yeah, I'm probably going to be doing a little day drinking on Sunday myself. I say, without hyperbole, that was probably the most embarrassing and disappointing week in the Wojo era. Is that fair?
I think that's fair, especially when you factor in expectations for where the team is. I mean, the team has performed, I guess I would say, that poorly in the past, but not so much when the expectations were to, you know, be competitive.
Right, yeah, like Wojo's first year, they were a team that lost a bunch of games, but we expected them to lose a bunch of games. Coming off a tournament appearance and having a top 10 offense again, and we were hoping for better this year, and there was a golden opportunity this week, and we got the exact opposite of what we expected. So in today's podcast, we are going to break down a very disappointing week, two very disappointing games, and yes, we are going to talk about Wojo's future, because that I think that's what everybody's kind of feeling right now is like, I mean, if he's not on the hot seat now, what's it going to take to be on the hot seat? We're going to talk about that possibility. And we're going to try to look forward a little bit and maybe try to lighten things up a little bit.
But right now, it's hard to help with that.
Yeah, well, please take a few sips as we kind of set up this first part of the segment, Phil, first part of the show. And for me, the big disappointment this week was that you had two home games before a stretch where Marquette plays a lot of road games. The tough part of the Big East schedule is past you. And if you want to be considered a tournament team and you get two teams at home that you are favored against, I know they're both good teams, but you have to beat them both. And then the Butler game was an abject disaster. They just got blown out of the water by 20 points on their home floor. And then you follow that up with what felt like almost a must-win game against Providence, and you don't get that done either. What is going on with Marquette right now?
Well, it was really bizarre, especially, you know, we kind of took the Xavier road loss in stride, which was, for all intents and purposes, a boat race. And so we took that in stride and said, well, you know what, they were really competitive against Villanova, had a shot to win that and didn't. So, all right, extrapolate that forward. They should be on at home, be competitive against a Butler team that they challenged at Hinkle and a Providence team that they took to overtime on the road. It turns out that maybe those games were the outliers and not these ones. I think really what it comes down to is we're starting to get to be the second go-round in the Big East. I think the book's out on what Marquette's doing.
Yeah, that is beyond fair to say. The three-point shooting hasn't been there the last few games. Not really, anyway. They didn't make a three-pointer in the second half against Providence.
They didn't make a three-pointer in the last, 24 minutes of the game. They hit their first four and then went 0 for 8 or 0 for 10 the rest of the game.
Yeah, and so teams are starting to say, look, if you want to beat us, Marquette, you need to go inside. You need to drive to the basket, or you need to go to your big men. And Marquette has not been able to do that. They haven't been able to adjust. They did try to get the ball to Sam Hauser more on Saturday. I will say that. Sam Hauser had a decent performance. Theo John showed up. He had a nice game in the paint. But still, when you can't count on that three-point shooting that you desperately need to make up for your lack of ability to stop anyone on the other end, then you're going to lose a lot of games. And when Marquette goes out and shoots 4 of 16 from 3, they're more than likely going to lose.
Yeah, do you think that the bad shooting is they're taking worse shots, the defense is playing better, or they're just off? Or is it, you know, yes to all of that?
Yeah, I think it's all that. But, yeah, I do think, I mean, Rousey and Howard are not getting great looks. I don't think, like, they're not missing wide open shots. I mean, guys are in their face a lot more, and you know, I think opposing guards are playing up on them, just daring them to drive past them, which that's not a strength for either one of them, particularly not Rousey. Howard at least has that floater he's been able to make use of in the lane, and it's been well documented that he never gets any calls when he's driving to the basket, but that's really not the reason Marquette's not winning. But I do think teams are selling out on the perimeter now more against Marquette and saying, look, this, if we can limit their three-point shooting, they're probably going to lose. And Wojo needs to make an adjustment somehow to get some more points in the paint, some more points from 15 feet in, because then maybe that opens up some three-point shooting, because they're just the offense has been a disappointment the past couple games, and you know, the defense is always a disappointment, but we've come to expect that. We kind of almost turned a blind eye to that and say, look, they're not going to play well defensively. We just got to hope we can outscore their opponents, and right now Marquette is not.
Yeah, which game is more, I mean, if you have to pick which one of the games you hated the most, the Butler or Providence game, which one is more disappointing or impactful for you? Butler, where they were never really in it, or the Providence game where they kind of had it, they kind of lost it, almost had a shot to win it, and then just, I mean, it was almost a metaphor for the season so far, where Marcus got the ball and basically tripped and fell and lost the ball and didn't get a last shot in the game. Which game bothers you more?
I guess having it ripped away from you against Providence bothers me more, especially when you had the lead. It looks like you were playing well enough to win in the first half. You know, you were getting contributions from a guy you don't normally get contributions from offensively in Theo John. And, you know, when somebody steps up offensively that is normally not there for you, you hope everyone else can contribute at a rate they normally do, and you should be able to get a win. So, from my perspective, losing to Providence was far more disappointing. Although, I don't want to gloss over that Butler game as well. When you have fans leaving with 12 minutes to go in the game, you know, you were just not putting out a product that people want to watch.
Right.
I mean, people were, you know, I was following it on Twitter, as I always do. You know, and watching the game too, but everyone was saying, I can't believe I'm doing this, but I'm leaving a Marquette game with 12 minutes to go. And people are taking pictures of the arena with like 8 minutes to go, and it looked like, you know,
it was dead. I was there 40 minutes, and it was
depressing. Yeah,
depressing.
And when I looked at that, when somebody was, you know, tweeted out a picture with like 4 minutes left, and it looked, you know, it looked like one of those college bowl games where, you know, there are like 100 people in the crowd, you know, that one of those games that no one goes to. I'm like, man, like that image jumped out to me. It's like, man, Wojo's got a problem.
Right.
And like, you know, fans are just walking out on the team and just can't bear to watch it. Like that, like from that perspective, that almost hurt more. It's like losing is one thing, but you know, if you can like get over a close loss to a good team, but when you are getting humiliated in your own gym, I guess my answer to your question is flipped around in the last minute I've been talking, but when you're getting humiliated in your own gym like that, to the point that your own fans just can't take it anymore, that really kind of sucked the life out of me a little bit. Like, wow, Wojo may have a problem here.
Well, and I will say this, you know, we've picked on, and it kind of dovetails into what you're saying, we've picked on the fan base a little bit here over the certainly the course of this season, you know, up until probably that Butler loss. We kept talking about what a interesting, exciting team this was. Basically, it's like the nine days between the DePaul and Xavier game. They swapped bodies with really bad basketball players, but we've been talking about this team being exciting. And in the Butler and Providence games, the fan base was not the fans were active and engaged for, you know, the 6 minutes it took Marquette to get down by like 47 points against Butler. And the fans were on the edge of their seats just waiting for something exciting to happen the entire Providence game. I know it's National Marquette game. You're going to get the
– Yeah, but they sold it out. Yeah, right. They filled the place up.
Yeah, right. So all the fans, even the casual fans, showed up, wanted a great product. So I think in the grand scheme of things, like, I agree with what you're saying, and gun to my head, I have to pick one of the two. I think Providence is the more disappointing one, simply because that was a game that it was in their hands to kind of right the ship. Like, you could make an excuse for, you know, Butler just had our number or whatever. But that Providence game with that crowd and the performance in the second half, with up until about 5 minutes left, which not coincidentally was when Rousey fouled out, that performance just was not what the fans deserved, right? The fan base is showing up, and to your point, I think Wojo's got a problem. He's got a product that all of a sudden, it's not a fan problem, it's a product problem.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're begging people to show up to the games and come watch this team, and the great city of Milwaukee said, all right, here we are.
Show
and what
us.
Happens?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, let's not, no more griping about, hey, let's show up and support this team that's fun to watch. Because that certainly was not fun to watch this week.
No.
That was brutality, is what that was. And I don't blame a single fan who walked out on that game on Wednesday. And, you know, everyone stuck with the game on Saturday, of course, because it was a close game up until the end. You know, I think the funny thing is, like, if Marcus Howard doesn't trip and lose the ball there and he runs down the floor and hits a three and wins the game, we'd all be breathing a big sigh of relief, say, oh, whoa, whew, got through it. Thank
right.
goodness.
Right. Well, that would almost be the worst thing that could happen, simply because that's like putting wallpaper on a giant hole in the outside wall or something. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, there's just because we won doesn't mean there's not fundamental problems with what this team is doing right now.
Yeah, I'm trying to think which direction I want to go next. Should we talk about Wojo a little bit more? Because I think that's on a lot of people's mind. And let's dive into Wojo, and maybe we'll talk a little bit more about what's wrong with the team. Because, you know, again, Wojo, if you saw his post-game presser after Saturday's game, visibly frustrated, which is what you would expect. And I would, maybe saying he stormed out on the media is overstating it, but he took a fair share of questions. He wasn't like one question and done. He probably took about 5 or 6 minutes worth of questions and answered them. But at one point he was talking about playing a tough schedule and being frustrated, and he said, I'm not blaming the officials. I just got to do a better job coaching. Thank you very much, and walked out. Like, you know, generally at a press conference, the coach answers enough questions and it gets to the point where the room is silent, meaning no one else has any questions. It's like, anything else? Okay, thank you very much. But when a coach answers a question and as he's answering says thank you and leaves, it's like, I just don't want to do this anymore. In the course of one of his answers, he did say, don't come down on the players. Come down on me, blame my coaching. And if the pitchforks want to come out, well, then you're just going to write what you're going to write. And so, like, I definitely want to direct most of it towards Wojo, because that is fair. And when you're breaking down college basketball players, you got to remember these guys are kids. And so I try to be as kind and as fair as possible with the players and talk more about the coaches when you're talking college sports. But, you know, what Wojo has built here so far, you know, there are certain things you would look at and say, all right, he's doing some good things here. You know, he brings in guys like the Housers and Howard, and he brings in some guys you like. But the sum of the parts has not come together. What he's assembled just doesn't seem to work for the most part. And, you know, like, for example, playing Rousey and Howard together has not worked lately. I'm not sure. There are certainly, obviously, his issues with his defense are well documented going back like 3 seasons now. And so the question is Wojo on the hot seat? I'm trying to remember the last time we were really upset with Wojo. I think we brought it up probably after the Georgia game, Phil, we were talking about.
Yeah, the Georgetown game last season. Well, it might be Georgia or certainly going back to Georgetown last season.
Yeah, I think at some point we were talking about Wojo this year, and you said, look, Wojo, if you're on the Fire Wojo campaign, you're not getting what you want this year. And I'm 99.99% sure I'm still of that opinion, that Wojo will get a chance to coach next year's team. That's the team he's been building towards, the 18-19 team that's going to be experienced, going to be deep, you know, barring a slew of transfers. And there should be enough talent at every position that he can compete in the Big East and finish in the upper third of it, especially when you consider what other teams are projected to lose. But I think it is fair to say right now, Phil, that Wojo has 14 months to save his job. So 2 months this year and then end of next year. I'd say the heat turns up. He's not getting fired this year. I'm almost certain of that. But something's got to move in a positive direction over the next 14 months. Or I think it's fair to say it wouldn't be working.
Well, here's the thing. I break this into two parts. I think the jury is very much still out on the question of can Wojo coach, right?
Yep.
I think it's clear that he can recruit to some degree. But you look at that play at the play where Marquette was down three with like a minute ago to go against Providence, took a timeout, had an out of bounds play drawn up, and it was just absolute garbage. Howard ended up taking a junk three that barely grazed rim, and you know, albeit thanks to some outstanding free throw defense, Marquette managed to get back in the game and have a shot to potentially tie or win. But it's stuff like that that, you know, on the outside make you go, is Wojo a good coach? So that's one question, but it's actually a separate question from is Wojo still going to be coaching 14 months from here? Because here's the deal. The way I would draw it up is our best players are, there's probably three sophomores and three freshmen. Those are the best players on the team. Those are the top six players on the team. And there's more talent coming in next year. If you blow it up this year or next year, is that talent still here? And if that talent goes because Wojo goes, because he gets fired, that becomes another reset, right? Like you're almost, yeah, to this point, all in on Wojo.
Well, I'll disagree with you a little bit there. I think you should never hesitate on making a coaching move because you're afraid of losing players. Because if you don't like the coach, then, or if the coach isn't getting it done, you're going to need to get in a new coach eventually. And all those players are only there 3 or 4 years eventually. Head coaching hires are like 5+ year decisions. So if you have a coach and you know he's not the guy, you make the move and you deal with the ramifications of losing players. I get what you're saying, like the idea that Howard and the Housers and Ed Morrow all just bolt, it may be scary to people. But you know, who knows? You may hire a guy who all those guys like and want to stick around and play for. But I even if they all left, like that can't be the reason you hold on to Wojo. Right?
Right.
Or hold on. You in any situation, you don't hold on to a coach just because you like the players or you're afraid the players might leave. If so, that's kind of where I would disagree on that point.
Well, it's fair, but by the same token, here's the question. I think it's a fair point, but it always comes down to Wojo for me isn't bad enough that it's gotten to the point where I'm going, all right, there's got to be someone better out there. The way I'm looking at it is if you make a move and you replace Wojo, who are you replacing him with? Another well-regarded assistant that may or may not work out?
Yeah, again, I'm not necessarily there on Wojo, like he has to go right now, just to be clear.
Right,
but if it's crystal clear that Marquette will routinely be about the 7th best team in the Big East under Wojo, then you've got to find somebody who can move the needle up, right?
Right.
So, and again, I that's not definitive at this point, but I saw a few people on Twitter tweeting yesterday, and I tend to agree with that on two points. One, you know, there was the tweet out there this week that looked at college basketball spending budgets across the NCAA, and Marquette's in the top 10. So,
and I think that's probably under reporting us because we're a private university,
right?
So we don't report the full total.
A couple of guys I follow on Twitter who I think have generally good, takes on Marquette were talking. If you were to rank the coaches in the Big East alone, where would Wojo rank? And I think the consensus we kind of came on was right around 7. You know,
right?
If you were, you know. So,
well, and at least one of those coaches is a first-year coach in LeVar Jordan.
Yeah, LeVar Jordan is just eaten his lunch twice this year. It's again, small sample size, but scoreboard as well.
Well, but so, here's the other part of it though. Like, how much do you factor in? So I guess I would say, you know, because we're positioning this in a next year is the year, right? So Wojo's going to have a lot of talent next year, but the other thing to consider is the Big East will lose a lot of talent after this season, right? I mean, Butler's probably going to take a step back. Creighton's going to take a step back. Seton Hall's definitely going to take a step back, right? So relatively speaking, Marquette could, I mean, stay the same and probably improve a couple of spots just by the talent that's leaving. So how, you know, that's the other thing I struggle with is how do we rate Wojo after next year? You know, if everyone got worse, it's not that Wojo got better.
Well, I think you would judge him fairly. Say you can only coach against the teams you're playing against, and it's one of those things that is cyclical. And you even if you want, like, I think maybe even a fair defense of Wojo right now. I don't think this is so much an excuse, but a fair defense. There are a lot of teams in the Big East right now on an uptick as he's rebuilding. Like, Seton Hall's got this class of this class of guys who are all seniors now. They came in the same time Isaiah Whitehead did, and he's in the NBA now. But Seton Hall is on an uptick now, but again, they're probably coming back to the pack. Villanova is at the best it's probably ever been as a program, like as far as a 4 or 5 year stretch. Butler is strong right now, but they'll be losing guys. Xavier is extremely strong. So, like, there are just so many guys who, because of, like, whether it's the continuity of the coaching staff or the team's just making good hires, that right now are on an uptick, but things are cyclical and guys graduate and everyone comes back to the pack. And so, I do think it's – I don't think you would put an asterisk by it if, say, Marquette finishes second in the Big East next year and say, well, yeah, but everyone else was down. No, you know, I wouldn't put an asterisk by that. I'd say, hey, look, you put yourself in a position to win and you won. So I would not, like, downgrade that if Marquette did very, very well next year if other teams did worse. Now, I wouldn't take that away from Wojo is, I guess, what I'm saying. But
then you also have to, on the flip side, you know, I guess give a little slack to Wojo because, like you said, he is rebuilding when a lot of other programs are at their peak. I mean, I think I tweeted a graph out this is probably a week or two ago, but of the seven kind of high performing teams in the Big East, Marquette over the last 5-6 years has, with maybe one exception, 1 year. Has been the least experienced team all those years.
Right. And I think it's something I said on last week's show is, like, I am tired of the phrase young team.
Right.
It is absolutely wearing me out. And they bring it up a lot, but that's one thing I'm excited about for next year. The phrase we're a young team should never be said next year.
Well, and if it does, that may be grounds for dismissal.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if next year's team's a young team, it's because there's a slew of transfers and you have to replace them with freshmen. And that brings up a whole another issue of roster continuity that I think it would be even also fair to bring up about Wojo. But, like, the excuses, and I'm like, you know, some of the excuses are fair. Maybe reasons is a better word. Maybe the reasons why Marquette hasn't been winning have been very fair to this point, but the reasons have slowly gone away. Like, the reason in the first year was, empty cupboard. Like, Buzz didn't leave much. So we forgive basically everything in the first year. Second year, there was the excuse, second, third years, not only young, but he doesn't have his guys in there yet, right? Well, he doesn't have his guys in here yet, that reason's gone. So you take that one away. Next year, the young team thing is gone.
Right.
You can't take that. And also the reason of, the rest of the Big East is just super strong. Well, that's always going to be there, but, like, that's not going to be an excuse. It's like, look, you're either going to be good or you're not.
Right.
So you got to beat good teams. So, but yeah, next year the youth thing is totally out the window because as the roster projects right now, you would have one senior in Matt Helt. Okay, yeah, you'd only have one senior. But you'd have five juniors, three of whom would have been starting since their freshman year. One of those juniors would be a redshirt junior in Ed Morrow, so he's a four-year college player. Yes, you'd have some sophomores on the team in key roles, but guys who played significant minutes as freshmen.
Yep.
You would have three freshmen on the team, one of whom is a redshirt freshman, so he's been on the roster, and granted he's been hurt, talking about Ike Eke. Another redshirt freshman in Joey Hauser, who has been with the team since January. And then the other freshman is going to be 20 years old, Brendan Bailey. So young team is not something we will talk about next year. And I would say if it comes up in the press conference, somebody said, like, Coach, are you really young? Are you, though?
Right. Right. Could you define for me the word young? Because I don't believe that you're using it appropriately.
So that's why, you know, I say, look, Wojo is going to get a chance to coach next year's team because that's the team he's been building towards. A team with that is projected to have, I should say, experience, depth, and talent. And at least enough talent that guys that he has brought in. And so he should get a chance to coach that team with, presumably, Howard as a junior, both Housers, Ed Morrow will be on the team, Froehling will be in his second year with the program, as on the roster anyway, and Theo John would be in his second year, Elliot and Kane, they would be in their second year, Sakar Annam will be in his fourth year, so he should get, and with the rest of the Big East presumably losing a lot, Wojo deserves a chance to coach that team. Because it'd almost be unfair if, like, Wojo was not the coach and some other coach came in and with all those players, you know, finished top three in the Big East, say, look, that's what Wojo built. Like,
right.
Those are his guys. So Wojo absolutely deserves the chance to coach next year's team.
Right. Well,
now,
and
if next year's team – yeah.
Well, I was just going to say that, like, I'm as frustrated as everyone in terms of the performance of the team, but there's not enough evidence. Like you said, there are enough reasons that you can justify the performance to this date. I think they're underachieving, but you can say, all right, if I squint, I get why we're here where we are. So I can't conclusively say Wojo can't coach or we got a real problem here. That's what we need next year for, right? Next year is determining – all right, do we have a guy who can coach and lead a team with both talent and experience and be successful? If next year turns out to be not good, well, then you know.
Yeah. If they miss the tournament next year, I think we'd all kind of be in agreement that it's not going in the right direction.
Well, quite frankly, my expectation for next year is that they should be a top 20 team the whole year.
That almost sounds like a huge leap, but considering everything that's coming back, maybe. But the thing is, they should make the tournament comfortably, is the way I look at it.
Yes.
I guess I don't think in terms of rankings. I think at top 25 rankings, because I guess I just don't put much stock in that. But as far as tournament seeding and like making a tournament, there should be a no doubt tournament bid for next year's team.
Well, let me put it this way. So they should have a 5 seed or high or better.
There shouldn't even be on the bubble.
Right.
It should be, like a 7-6-5 or higher, right?
Mm-hmm.
Something that they comfortably in. We're sitting on Selection Sunday wondering what the seed is, not if we're in.
Right.
So that's, And, one thing you said about can Wojo coach and everything I think another question that's fair to ask with Wojo is, can he construct a roster that works together, right? And his two best scorers right now, that's the struggle thing he's dealing with right now, they just seemingly don't produce when they're on the floor together. Like, we always say, I wonder if we're ever going to have a game when Rousey and Howard are both on. And quite frankly, I don't even know if that's possible.
I don't think it's a thing anymore. I don't think it's something we can ask for because we've never seen it. It's a unicorn.
I don't think we're going to have a game where both Rousey and Howard are, in that range where they're hitting, 5+ 3-pointers or scoring 25, 30 points each. I just don't think that's possible.
I'd settle for one of them being good right now.
Yeah, exactly. And see, that's the thing where Wojo needs to make an adjustment this year and going into next year is, can he put together a defense that is just usable, right? And that has to deal with the personnel. And if that means he has to bring in somebody else, another player, because I guess he does have a scholarship to work with for next year, then that's something he'll have to consider. And the thing is, Rousey wouldn't be on the team next year, so can you build a team that is good enough defensively around Marcus Howard at the point? Hopefully he can, but I think that's the thing Wojo is really struggling with on this year's team. And I don't have the answer, but I'm at least going in the direction of trying to figure out an answer of, like, what do you do with those two guys? Because I know Wojo wants them both on the floor because Marquette is such a great offensive team with them both on the floor, or at least it has been. But they're just so bad defensively, and when they're neither one of them is getting three-point shots, the other team is just pulling away. Well, and you're not able to make up for it. And so, like, Wojo needs to make an adjustment over the next, you know, 6 weeks here. And if that means, like, again, I'm trying not to come down on the kid and make it, because we're talking about kids, but if that means you have to take Rousey out of the starting lineup and make him a role player off the bench, that's something you have to consider if it's about, you know, surviving the season or, you know, making this season watchable or not. Again, it's not like it's all on Rousey. It's not so much about him it's as it is how he fits with the rest of the roster, or how he and Howard fit together, I should say. And so I think that's one thing that he and the coaching staff have to determine is, like, look, are we willing to sacrifice this offense to maybe be a better team overall? And I think that's something that they'll have to consider as they get ready for this week.
Well, I want to put a pin in that very conversation about the Rousey making changes to the roster, but I want to ask a backward-looking question first, and this is really around Wojo. What changes has he made? What adjustments has he made over the course of, I don't know, the last couple of weeks, right? I mean, we can really go back to the last good game Marquette had was the Seton Hall blowout at home, right? They blew out Seton Hall. Then they played DePaul, and they won comfortably, but everyone, we even said on the podcast, you know, they kind of played like crap and still won. That's how bad DePaul was. And ever since then, the team has not played well. And again, I think it's a lot of the Big East knows what Marquette wants to do. So what is Wojo doing to adjust? Last season after the Georgetown loss, he made a few adjustments that kind of got them to sneak in. But what I'm not seeing any adjustments right now. Have you?
Well, I will say this, and this probably isn't necessarily fair to point out, but, you know, it's facts are facts. He did put Froehling in the starting lineup, and they're 0-3 since then.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, again, that's not fair to Harry because, granted, one of those games was Villanova, and I don't think Harry is the reason they've lost these games necessarily. So, I mean, that's one adjustment. I guess maybe the thought was just to add some rebounding, and maybe he has. I guess maybe I haven't tracked the rebounding stats. But that's one adjustment he's made. But he does seem content rolling with Rousey and Howard together as much as possible. And I think that is a concern when I just don't think it works.
Right. Go ahead.
No, yeah, but I get what you're saying as far as what's a huge adjustment, like a major shift in the lineups or rotation that you've noticed over the last few weeks? Not much. And the thing is, maybe one reason is that because we were forgiving, understandably, when you're losing to Xavier and Villanova. It's like, well, they're good teams. You know, you lose to good teams. But those things are just amplified this week on a week that was important to get at least one win. And what you got was one absolute blowout and another that just, you know, ripped the heart out of the fan base on Saturday. So maybe you will see an adjustment this week as far as rotations or focal point of the offense. But, yeah, I guess I wouldn't have much else to point out other than that Froehling is starting now. And to be fair, and again, to be fair to Froehling, him starting is probably a good move, but
right. Well, know. And he's starting, but I we saw it a little bit under the Buzz era as well, you know, namely Eric Williams. Froehling starting, but but Wojo seems to have a quick hook on him. If he's not playing well, then he kind of uses him sparingly, like he rode Theo John in the Providence game, because apparently Theo John read the tweet where I said he couldn't hit rim and decided, you know what, that guy's a jerk. I'm gonna go.
Theo John is mad at you.
He's coming for me. I'm gonna have nightmares. But you know, and the reason I ask that is you know, I think there's been some stuff kicking around on social media around different ideas. Paint Touches had some thoughts. I threw some quote-unquote guidelines out there around what I would like to see. And it leads to two things. One, let's talk about what changes we would make. And two, you know, if the greater social media sphere, which I think it's fair to say none of us are highly paid college coaches, if we're seeing
I don't think
things,
you even need – I don't think you even need all those adjectives. None of us are coaches.
Right. None of us are coaches. Right. But we see, A, the need for change, and B, have some ideas as to how to change it. The question is, why doesn't Wojo – what is it – I would love to get some truth syrup into Wojo and say, all right, what the hell? Like, what are you continuing to do this for? Why not make a change because it's clearly not working?
Yeah, I don't know who did the game prep for Butler, but – because normally it's the assistants that do, like, the scouting and put together a game plan. But whoever did the scouting report for Butler this year, both games – you get an F, sir.
Well, and one thing I want to, before I forget, the Providence game, we talked about officials and not getting, and I think that's another excuse or reason that should kind of die this season, simply because the officiating in the Big East sucks. Like, and it's not favored one end or the other. Like, it just sucks generally. But the other thing I want to point out with, and I don't know if it showed up on television, but when Rousey got his fifth foul, he was in the team huddle, and he absolutely stared down the official that called the foul, to the point that the official came over and tapped one of the assistants on his shoulder and basically said, get your boy under control over there. And they had to, like, physically keep him from staring at this official. You know what's not going to help get us calls? That kind of crap.
Right. Yeah. And to be fair to Rousey, he had a rough week. He had as many points as you and I did against Butler.
Yeah.
And then he only had 7 points and fouled out against Providence. And
but that's part of the and the reason I bring that up is that's part of the problem, right? Like, it's not whatever's going on with Rousey. I don't know if he's injured, he's got issues at home, like he's schoolwork's got him down, whatever. He's not playing well right now. You got to change it up for him.
Yeah, and maybe I think some of it is guys are just up in his shirt around the 3-point line and forcing him to say, "Look, I know you want to shoot, buddy. So I'm going to like just get up in your face and either dare you to drive past me where I know my big guy is going to swat you when you get in the paint, or I'm going to dare you to shoot a 30-footer, which your percentages go down even though you're a great shooter and can make it from almost anywhere." And so I just don't think I can't remember a good look that Rousey has had the past 2 weeks. Maybe he missed one in the corner against Butler that I thought was a wide open look that he should knock down. But that's only one shot, so you're not going to make every shot. But I think, you know, he's been, you know, trying to make shots with guys in his face, trying to back up a little bit and get a little more room, or he's driving to the basket, which really is not his strength. Again, little guys just aren't going to get calls. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that's the way it is. When you go to the basket and you're under 6 feet, you're just not getting calls. It's just the way it is. And so I think teams are starting to figure that out. Say, hey, look, let's just dare these little guards to go to the basket. And as long as we've got a big guy in there who can block shots, it's probably not going to end well for them. So I think teams are adjusting. And yeah, so Marquette maybe needs some guys who can drive to the basket and draw fouls. And I think Sakar, in some respects, has stepped up a little bit in that role.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I'd never – yeah, and I love Sakar as a role player. I just don't see him as a guy who's going to carry your team and, you know, get you 25 points and lead you to victory. I mean, you need the stars to step up. You need Rousey, or you need Howard and Hauser. And I think they did a pretty good job trying to get Hauser involved on Saturday. It just didn't lead to quite enough. But I think, you know, there's plenty of tape out on this Marquette team that a good coaching staff could put together a game plan to take Rousey and Howard out of what they want to do.
Well, and I think that's accurate, but I think what needs to happen is, again, this is an adjustment, and it's a question of whether Wojo can make it or not, is not that the team needs to play from inside out, but they need to make a change such that, you know, maybe the ball, the focus of the offense is through Hauser, or maybe we're going to do more slashing. But the primary looks need to evolve away from a Rousey and a Howard, and they need to come from somewhere else to get teams to – because you're right, they're absolutely just going, all right, you know what, I'm going to live in this guy's shorts and dare them for anyone else to score. You know what we need to do? We need to have somebody else score. You know, and Sakar and Theo John did that against Providence, but the problem is you got to get more than that, because unfortunately the defense is bad enough that if you're not scoring threes with significant proficiency, you can't keep up. So it's a question. I mean, one of the big things I would change, I think you mentioned it earlier when I said we need to put a pin in it. I think Rousey needs to go to the bench, and I think he needs to be a role player off the bench.
Yeah, and again, I hate that for him because that almost sounds like, well, it's his fault. It's not his fault.
No.
Really. It's, again, we're talking about kids who play for books and tuition here. But I'm just trying to break it down analytically and talk about, you know, what statistically makes sense for the team. And I think Rousey coming off the bench as a scoring punch, a shooter off the bench and spelling Howard might work. And it's certainly worth trying, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'd say at this point, realistically, your shot at an at-large bid is pretty much gone. Like, yes, technically they could win out, maybe. Or technically they could win 6 of their last 7 games and be in the discussion. I wouldn't bet a nickel on that happening. I kind of expecting 2 losses this week, if I'm being honest with you. But you got to try something different.
Yeah.
And if again, it's not necessarily blaming Rousey. It's like, you know, sitting down with a kid and say, look, we need to shake something up and see if a different lineup makes this team more efficient, both offensively and defensively. Because it's great that we have a top 20 offense, but when we got a defense in the 150s, but maybe we can get it closer to 100-ish with playing Sakar and Kane and Elliott more minutes. Shouldn't we try that and see if it works? And maybe it does, and maybe you're a better team when the Big East tournament starts, and who knows what can happen there. So, again, to be crystal clear, we're not trying to say this is all on Rousey per se. He struggled, yes, but the team defensively is the biggest problem by far. And if you can get guys who play better defensively more minutes, maybe the team is better as a whole, and again, when Rousey comes in to spell Howard, he may play better, and this could allow him to contribute more. He is currently not contributing the way this team is constructed, so maybe by changing his role, he will flourish in that new role, and the team will be better as a whole. Something different has to be attempted this week, because the definition of insanity is trying the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I agree. I don't know how much the defense – I mean, the defense has got to improve if you play one fewer 5'10 player. You know, if you've only got one of those on the floor as opposed to two, the defense probably gets a little better just naturally. But it's also about doing something different on offense. Again, I think if we get a little bit more more slashers involved, have Elliott involved as a slasher. Kane's proven he can shoot in a limited sample size. So but get some more athleticism on the floor. And see where that takes you. The other reason I would advocate for making changes like that, getting more of that youth on, absolutely we have to play for, if Wojo said the only way we're going to get a tournament bid is playing Rousey and Howard together 35 minutes, all right, if that's what we think, go for it. But I got to say, I don't think that's true, A, and B, we got to get the youth some experience, because if I'm Wojo, next year I got to be all in. So, if you're not going to make the tournament this year, you damn well better make sure you've got players with experience for next year.
Yeah, and again, speaking of tournaments, just checking Bracket Matrix on Sunday as we're recording this. Currently, for what it's worth, Marquette, while trending backwards, technically last team in on Bracket Matrix. Now, that basically means you're out because teams steal bids and knock you out. But they are in on only 38 of 79 brackets posted right now. So trending backwards, probably out. And my concern going forward is, if you're going to get enough wins to maybe move that needle and get out and, get out of Dayton on these projections. Because if you're projected as one of the last 2 or 3 teams in, you're going to get knocked out by teams stealing bids during championship week. That always happens. It happens every year. Sometimes it's ridiculous and there's like 6 or 7 bid stealers. Generally, maybe you get like 2 or 3, maybe 4. But you don't want to be on that projection as a last team in. And the thing is, the opportunities for great wins, they're really not...
You got
they're
three.
They're kind of few and far between.
you got
chances for... Yeah, you got 3 chances. You got Seton Hall and Creighton twice. Every other game is a season ender if you lose it.
Yep.
I would say, some people even say Providence was a season ender just because you needed a quality win and to get yourself in a position to try to get 10 wins in the league. You know, over the past week, KenPom's projection for Marquette in the Big East has almost flipped on its head, going from about 10 or 11 wins to 7 and 11.
Yeah, not good.
Well, so that's what losing two games at home the teams you're supposed to beat will do.
Yeah, and so here's the thing. I mean, the minimum threshold to even have a chance is 5-2. And like you said, four of those games are against, you know, garbage teams or what are seemingly the garbage teams. You lose
but two of them are against a team that just beat Duke.
yeah, well, you know, I don't know. Should we be concerned that Wojo comes from the Coach K loses to St. John's on the road tree?
Yes, we should.
Yeah,
I think we can all agree that Duke would be the 11th place team in the Big East. Could we all agree on that?
I agree, and quite frankly, totally. We would not accept them.
Yeah, no, no interest.
No, we'd rather take UConn.
UConn.
Yeah, oh boy, sad trombone. It's the thing with you know, they got to go 5-2 at a minimum threshold, right? And four of the games are absolutely have to win. So you go 1-2 against the three good wins. I still don't think that's enough, but it's gonna force the committee to think about it. But it's really a question of how did we get here? Like the top half of the schedule was supposed to be the hard part, and they weathered that with, I wouldn't say flying colors, but certainly better than we hoped. And I think that's probably the toughest thing for the fan base is how do we go from, hey, look at us, we have a shot at 11 wins to, holy crap, we may not win again.
Yeah, exactly. That's what losing two games at home will do to you. Yeah, and you know, Wojo talked about the schedule in his post-game presser, and see the thing that he's kind of missing there is nobody is talking about they're upset with you because you lost to Xavier and Villanova and Purdue. That's not what people are upset about. They're upset that you lose two games at home to Butler and Providence.
Right.
Both good teams, but if you want to be a tournament team, you've got to beat those teams, at least one of them, to even be in the mix. So, again, you can't just say, oh, well, we play a bunch of good teams, so it's okay that we lose to all of them. No, it isn't, because if you lose to all of them, you're going to be 7th or 8th in the Big East. A buddy of mine at work who's a big Georgetown fan texted me this morning. He said, you know, for all the hell you gave me over Georgetown, you're only one game better than us right now in the Big East. I'm like, yep, that is true.
But the question is, do they shoot that shot?
They do shoot that shot.
Have you practiced that shot?
They do practice that shot, and they do shoot it.
Okay, good.
Better than Marquette right now.
That is fair. Who just took Xavier to overtime yesterday.
Yep. And see, that's the thing. Like, St. John's beating Duke, like, I am no longer sure Marquette could beat St. John's, because St. John's is due to get a Big East win somewhere, and we play them twice. So I'm scared to death that Marquette is going to be with St. John's first and maybe second Big East win. So I am scared to death of that. DePaul is always a nightmare when you travel there. Granted, it's a new arena this year, but it's still traveling to DePaul. And Georgetown's a road game. See, that's the big thing I say everything's the big thing. That's another thing that's frustrating to me is you get two home games before this huge stretch when you're on the road 5 out of 6 games. Granted, there gets a lot of them against teams that you could beat and maybe have beat, but still you're on the road, man. So Wojo and Marquette have to play their way into relevance mostly on the road for the next 4 weeks.
Well,
so that's a little scary to me.
Well, not only is that scary, but I mean, if I'm putting on the pessimistic hat, you know, there is an argument to be made, especially the way the team's playing right now. Let's say St. John, you know, who just beat Duke, can beat Marquette at home. You know, you got Seton Hall, who's a very good team. You've got Creighton, who's somewhat unknown with their injuries, but again, is a good team, right? They've been a top 25 program for most of the year.
Yep.
There is a scenario where you could construct it, you know, and Georgetown is not, I don't think they're good, but hey, they took Xavier at home to overtime, right? So there's a theory you could construct where Marquette goes like 1-6 down the stretch.
Oh yeah. If Marquette continues to shoot to shoot the ball the way it has this past week, you are in for a very rough February, my friend. Yeah. A very rough one.
And we talked about Wojo not being on the hot seat this season, but, I mean, 1-7 down the stretch in a, what would that make it, a 5-12 or 5-13 Big East record?
You wouldn't feel good at all, but I still maintain the 99% chance that Wojo is back. 99.9% chance.
Oh, I agree. Wojo's back.
He's not. Even if he loses out, he is not getting fired this year. But the hot seat cranks up the day the season ends. Say, all right, you've got 12 months now to convince us you're the guy. And so, again, if there's roster turnover, there's roster turnover. If there's coaching staff turnover, he'll have to do that too. He's going to have to do whatever he can, whatever he needs, whether it's coaching adjustments, changes on his staff, changes to the roster, whatever he has to do over the next 14 months to make sure he is still the coach in 2019-2020. That being said, if I had to place my chips, is Wojo the head coach of Marquette basketball in the 2019-2020 season? I would say yes. Just because I think, as disappointing as this season looks like it's going to be, he'll probably save his job and make the tournament next year. And then Marquette University will be in the tough situation of extension or not, right?
Right.
Because he's going to be in that rut, do we give this guy an extension or we let it go another year? So if you're asking me, will Wojo still be the coach in 2.5 years, I would say yes. But he's got to prove it over the next 14 months.
Well, and that's where, I come back to adjustments, right? I mean, it's maybe it sounds dumb or cliche or whatever, but, you know, and again, I'm the eternal optimist on this podcast. I just don't see enough right now that tells me they're going to turn it around. Now, that you can say that right up until they actually turn it around. So maybe he's got a card up his sleeve. Maybe he coaches harder or coaches different or the team plays different or better or somehow, you know. And I
just love the phrase coaching harder.
Right.
What is coaching harder? Does that mean doing push-ups while he's yelling at them or like wearing weights while he's running up and down the sideline? Coaching harder made me laugh, but please go on.
He's doing jumping jacks the entire time that he's coaching. But you know, the question ultimately is, they're in a bad spot. What is he at this point? It's coaching, right? I mean, this is not, the roster is what it is. The players are who they are. You could make an argument that maybe they're not shooting as well as they have or something like that. But at some point, this is coaches not putting players in a position to be able to succeed. So what is going to change to put players in a position to succeed during what is unquestionably the easiest part of the Big East schedule?
Does Wojo think what he's been doing is going to work against a lesser schedule, or is it time to make an adjustment? I hope it's the latter.
Right.
And the thing is, the first test is Wednesday against a Seton Hall team that you know is going to be pissed off and ready to prove that the last game was a total fluke when Marquette blew them out. It's amazing. After that Seton Hall game on January 9th, how happy were we?
Oh, I know. Listen back to that podcast.
Well, the thing is, because we went out and lost to Butler on Friday, so that kind of soured it a little bit when we recorded that podcast on that Saturday or Sunday, whenever we did it.
Right, yeah,
but
right.
Still, we were just busting after that Seton Hall. Say, hey, okay, yeah, we went to Hinkle and lost, but man, what a great performance. We have seen the team at its peak, and that's what this team can be, and that's how good they can be. We are in the right direction, and then ever since then, I mean, I'm not sure they've played well. But maybe the only time they've played well since was Villanova when they lost.
Right.
And you said it right. It's been a mess.
We've seen their peak. That's the problem. They kind of put it all in on Seton Hall and have played like crap since. I mean, it's, you know, I kept saying on Twitter that, you know, at some point some of these games were the outliers, right? The good games were the ones that were more the trend. We've seen now enough that the trend is the bad games and perhaps the good games were the outliers. So this team may be trending bad more than they're trending good based on their performance. So again, it's all going to come down to adjustments. I don't think, you know, not all to be all doom and gloom, losing to Seton Hall on the road, is not like the worst thing ever or unexpected. I mean, Seton Hall should probably beat us regardless of where we are on the schedule. But we've got to see some sort of marked improvement. If we go into Seton Hall and lose by 20, I'm really concerned.
Yeah, like losing to Seton Hall, it's like, yeah, I mean, it's bad, but it's just adding to what's already bad. It's like throwing right. another match in the forest fire. Like, it's not like it's making things that much worse. It's like, all right, well, we kind of expected to lose that. But it would certainly be nice to capture whatever Marquette did so extraordinarily well against Seton Hall the first time and go get a road win, because that at least gets you back on the path to healing. And maybe would if you do that, maybe you have some confidence. I'm guessing because they're playing St. John's on Saturday that they're just going to stay in the tri-state area
yep.
there Thursday, Friday, and just, you know, not, I don't, unless there's some kind of rule that says they have to, I don't see there's a reason to come home after Wednesday in Newark.
Maybe they can go find a outdoor basketball court that they can wear white t-shirts and canvas
yes!
shorts to go. That's got to make a difference, right?
Yeah. Thing is, we've been hard justifiably on Wojo in this podcast, but one thing I will give him credit for, he is owning it. Like in the post-game presser, he did say, look, it's on me. I love my players. He used the phrase young team, which makes my skin crawl again, but he did say, look, it's on me. Come after me. Don't come after my players. So he's putting it on himself and he's ready to take the fire for himself. But yeah, I don't know if coming down on the players and like punishing them by doing the whole plain white tees thing is the best thing. Go to what's the place they work out? The Station 23 Jumpman thing that in New York. You know what I'm talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, platform, whatever it is. It's the Jordan Brand facility that they work out in. I'm sure they'll just stay there. I'm assuming they'll stay there this week. But yeah, the thing is, if you can somehow beat Seton Hall, which again I wouldn't bet a nickel on Wednesday, you would. The perspective changes a little bit towards optimism because, one, that would be a nice quality win. And, two, you say, all right, look at the rest of the schedule. We could probably win 5 out of the last 6.
Right. Well, and
but yeah. The thing is that, again, maybe you're getting too full of yourself. But, I think Seton Hall is going to be way too good and ready to show that first game was a fluke. So, I'm concerned about this road trip for sure, that the wheels could fall off totally. But,
well, and that's what I was going to say, is that you lose to Seton Hall, which, again, is not unexpected, but now you've lost 5 in a row. What does that do to your confidence? And you're going into St. John's, where St. John's offense is terrible. They're like a 100-plus offense per KenPom, but their defense is one of the better defenses we'll face all season, I think, like 42 or 43 per KenPom. That's not a good recipe, right? I mean, our defense is crap, so that means St. John's can get points. And if St. John's can limit yep. us, then we're in trouble. And now all of a sudden yep. you've got 6 in a row lost.
Yeah, I'm just like deathly afraid that Shamari Pons goes off for like 45 points.
Oh, absolutely.
Against Marquette's defense. And then St. John's is just able to shut down Marquette on the perimeter. There's absolutely a formula for St. John's to beat Marquette on Saturday, and I am deathly afraid of it. And the thing is, I've kind of already of the mindset that the at-large possibility is gone. I've had people argue with me and say 9-9 could still be good enough. I'd love to be proven wrong. I just don't see it, especially if, you know, you don't get another quality win. Like the only win, like if you go 9-9 and the way you do it is, you lose to Seton Hall, you beat St. John's, lose at Creighton, then you win 4 straight to finish the season. You know, your best win will be Creighton at home. And I'm just not sure that's enough to move the needle and get you off that, you know, the bad side of the bubble. So my gut has always been like 11 is the magic number, 11 being some combination of regular season wins and Big East tournament wins. So maybe 9-9 plus 2, I could be convinced that gets you in. Because, you know, then hopefully you would, after winning an easy game in the first round, because if
well, you know, 9-9, we're going to be finished probably 7th in the Big East.
Yeah, so then you're facing probably St. John's or DePaul in the first game. So then you need to beat them and then hopefully get catch a really good team in the next round, right?
Right. So which probably ends up being Butler or something.
Xavier, because the seventh seed would play the two.
Yeah,
so
you're right.
You're probably getting Xavier. So if you do that, okay, then I would say you get in. I'm still sticking with 11 as a magic number. Combination regular season and Big East tournament wins. That's the only way I would say Marquette would be back in the realm of an at-large berth. For the most part, I'm saying that's not a possibility. Maybe I change my tune. If Marquette goes out and gets two wins this week, I'll come back and sing a different tune next week. But I just don't see that as a possibility the way this team's playing right now. The defense will always be bad, and if the offense is slumping, there's no way this team wins like 6 out of 7 games.
Well, I agree. I guess what I'm saying is your 11's probably – it's probably right. If Marquette wins 6 out of 7 going in before the tournament, I don't know that they have to win one in the tournament, because then six out of seven puts them at 10-8. They're probably a 6 seed. So which means they're playing probably either Butler or Seton Hall for that, you know, who's going to be the 3 seed. So do you have to win that? I don't know. 10-8 gets you in, but I do think you're right. Let's put it this way. If they go 10-8, they're probably in without winning a tournament game. If they're 9-9, they have to get to 11 wins. I think that
I think that's fair. Cause that first game's not doing anything for you by beating
right.
DePaul St. John's or Georgetown in the first game. So that 10th win in that scenario would not do anything for you. You got to get a quality win to sell yourself to the committee. So
yep, exactly. I think
that's kind of where I stand on it. So
it's going to be a tough week, man. The telltale sign, it's one of these, like, just psychologically, I don't mean this literally, but I think, like, psychologically and just to put you on the right side of the next 7 games, I think Seton Hall is a must win.
If you want to talk at large, yes.
Because, I mean, you could still win your last 6 in a row, right? I mean, that theoretically is possible.
Yeah, just like getting to the Final Four is theoretically possible.
Right.
But, like, I just – Paint Touch has said it best yesterday on Twitter when I was chatting with him. Is like, you can talk about the math maybe or maybe not working, but I want to see this team play better.
Yeah.
Like, before I talk about whether the math works or not. So – I just want to see the team play better. See if Wojo's going to make any adjustments with the lineup. See if the defense will ever. I've almost kind of given up on the defense ever being something I could stomach this year. But who knows, if he makes changes to the lineup, maybe it's something you can live with. But yeah, I want to see some kind of turnaround this week that gives me some reason to be optimistic about the team. Right now, I just can't have that. So if you're asking for predictions this week, I'm saying it's a loss at Seton Hall, and then you have a deflated team going to St. John's on Saturday and losing that one too.
So you're going 0-2.
0-2.
Okay. I'm going to need to take my crazy pills, but I think they go 2-0 this week.
Phil.
No, seriously. Seriously.
Phil.
This is the backs against the wall.
What are you drinking again?
A lovely City Lights Brewing Company coconut porter, but I will, and with cocaine apparently. Whatever makes you go crazy. The reason I say this is absolutely the season on the line, right? Like, so they're either going to go 2-0, or I think you're right, they're going to go 0-2. I don't think this is a 1-1 kind of thing.
You are the optimist.
And I'm going to say this is a kitchen sink game. Like, Wojo just goes, F it, we're changing stuff up. Now, if the same starting lineup comes out and the first 10 minutes look the same as every other game, I will immediately destroy this podcast and deny I ever made this prediction.
Fair enough. I think that'd be fair. I think that's very fair.
Yeah, I think Wojo has to realize this is the season on Wednesday.
Yeah, he knows it too. I mean, like I said, the frustration was visible if you saw any of the post game press.
Oh, absolutely.
On Saturday. Yeah, I mean he knows, he's not dumb. I mean, he knows the adjustments need to be made, but I will see if he's able to make them. So. So was this a good therapy session? Did we get through it okay?
I think we're fine. I think I'm going to go have some more beers during the Super Bowl. But yeah, that'll help really take the edge off. But I don't feel better, but I feel not bad.
It's good to talk through it. It's good to talk through it. You know, I thought I would wrap today with something kind of lighthearted, I guess, and a little funny. I don't know if you saw this on Twitter this week. Big Baller Brand, who of course, is LeVar Ball's thing. You know, his company.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, he's trying to start America. Yeah, he's trying to start a league for amateur athletes so they don't go to college and just play in the league. Did you see this?
I did, and there was a list of targets who he reached out to and probably said something like, not only no, but hell no.
Yeah, he got lots and lots of no's, which I can relate to sometimes. But he, like, one of the names on the list, though, was Joey Hauser. Mm. He apparently reached out to Joey Hauser. And this is all courtesy Tipton Edits, by the way. I don't know if you know who Tipton Edits is.
I'm not familiar with their work, no.
All right, it's basically, you know what I mean when I say an edit, like kind of like a Photoshop?
Yes.
You know, kids on, you know, the kids who, all these recruits, they love it when people do a Photoshop of them, you know, in their potential college jerseys, right?
Yep.
And this guy, I think he's a kid, actually. He's either in high school or college. But he's apparently really good at it on his phone. And all these top recruits trust him to say, hey, look, I'm considering these three schools. Could you Photoshop me in these three jerseys? And he does it for him, and he tweets it out, and all the recruits love it. But anyway, so he's earned the trust of all these top recruits, and he reached out to all of them, and they all told this guy, Tipton, I forget his first name, but and so he was basically all over the story. So I had to give him credit, but he got several recruits, like probably like 30, 40, 50 recruits to show them a screenshot of the Big Baller Brand message. And he tweeted them out and said, like, for example, Joey Hauser has told me he has reached out to or Big Baller Brand has reached out to him and he's declined. Tyler Hero was another one. That was when he definitely screenshotted and like it was a message, but he tipped in edits. Listed a complete list of every player who has been confirmed, contacted, and said no, and Joey Hauser was one of them. I would have loved to see the face on Steve Wojciechowski when Joey Hauser told him that. Said, hey, you want to hear something funny? LeVar Ball reached out to me today and asked me to join his professional basketball league. What do you think about that? Again, it's probably not the time right now considering the way the team is going, but I would love to see Wojo just sound off on LeVar Ball in a press conference and say, leave my freaking players alone. Stop hopping in their DMs and trying to get them to join your league. So that just crap. I don't know if Big Baller Brain even knows that Joey's on campus with Marquette now, because they probably just like went to an ESPN top 100 list and just DM'd like all 100 of them, try to get them to join the league. And so far, zero people have said no, or zero people have said yes, and the vast majority have given a definitive no, and apparently Joey is one of those. So that just kind of made me laugh this week.
Based on past performance of the Big Baller Brand and the lead of the Big Baller Brand, I'm 100% convinced that they have no idea that Joey is already on campus and probably don't even know who he is, quite frankly. I think they just got a list and they called some people.
Yeah, they literally did it through Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't call, email, they didn't go through the coaches, go AU coaches. They just sent a DM on Twitter, say, hey, Tyler, congratulations, you've been offered a spot in the Big Baller Brand, or the JBA, whatever the hell he's calling it, and please contact us, let us know. Not every kid wants to do what they, like, LeVar wants to do and just play pro at all costs, even if it's in Lithuania. A kid like Tyler Hero was a great example. A kid who may have an NBA future. He's not a one and done. He's a kid who probably actually does want to go to college for a few years and develop. And so playing for something called the JBA for a couple years, what is in that for him? Like, other than maybe a couple thousand bucks, he's probably getting more in benefits, like value benefits from Kentucky than he would get from that. Like, you get a chance to train with John Calipari and his training staff. I don't know who the hell is going to be coaching in the JBA, but he's not as good as John Calipari, I promise you that.
Well, and have you been to Lithuania?
I have not.
I had a day trip into Lithuania once. It's not what you would call paradise. So I don't know that it's someplace I want to go play basketball. Especially as an 18-year-old.
One more funny note before we get out of here. Just because you brought up UConn earlier and we were talking about the Big East, have you seen my favorite new sports conspiracy theory?
Please share with me what it is. I don't know that I know.
So I love a good sports conspiracy theory just because no matter how ridiculous it is, it's never totally proven false, so people always hang on to a little bit of it. Obviously, the most famous one is the frozen envelope in the draft lottery. Was it 84-85 when Patrick Ewing was in it to make sure
85.
The Knicks got him?
Yep.
You know, my favorite sports conspiracy theory of all time is that Michael Jordan playing baseball was a secret suspension for gambling.
Basically every theory Bill Simmons has ever come up with.
Yes, exactly. But anyway, the new conspiracy theory out there involves UConn. It's, you know, there were reports over the last
One Shining Moment? Or One Shining podcast theory?
Yeah, they did mention it on their show, but yeah, talking about how, you know, Connecticut is reportedly under investigation for recruiting violations or whatever, and there's a clause in Kevin Ollie's contract that if he is under investigation, then if there are, like, sanctions are found, that they could fire him without owing him a dime. So the conspiracy theory is somebody at UConn turned him in, like, and put themselves – hoping to put themselves on probation so they could get rid of Kevin Ollie.
We may have issues with Wojo, but we're not to the point where we're self-reporting to the NCAA.
That's an amazing story. Oh, but no, it's just funny. The reason that's also funny is you mentioned One Shining Pod is that they've mentioned a couple times that I think they think Tom Crean is angling for that job, which would be awesome. I would love to see Tom Crean get the Connecticut job, but yeah, that made me laugh in the last week or two as well.
Well, and Ruby Q on Twitter is making an absolute case for bringing Tom Crean back to Marquette. Yeah. So that would take it off the table if he went to UConn.
Oh boy, that would be something. Hopefully that's something we don't have to consider.
If Wojo were to leave and Tom Crean were to come back, what would we need, a 2 or 3 hour podcast to discuss that?
It would be a 5-part series.
it would be cereal but scrambled eggs.
Yeah, I just don't want to, like, I think we've gone long enough on this podcast. I could go into another hour about the takes and the pros and cons of bringing Tom Crean back to Marquette. Hopefully it doesn't come to that and Wojo can rally sometime here in the next year and a half and restore faith in the fan base. But hey, I know everyone's a little disappointed, maybe a lot disappointed over the past week, but that's why we're here. Hopefully talk you through it, and we thank you for just being with us here on Scrambled Eggs and talk about Marquette basketball. Rough week, frustrating week, dare I say an embarrassing week, but hopefully things get better over the next couple months, and maybe, who knows, maybe March could be interesting yet, even if we're chasing an NIT championship. But that's going to do it for this edition of Scrambled Eggs. I think we've talked long enough. We always appreciate you joining us. Hit us up with your thoughts on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. You can hit up the team handle, Crack Sidewalks. Go to cracksidewalks.com. Leave your comments under the podcast. We post them there. Go on iTunes, rate and review and subscribe. We appreciate that as always. And we also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. If that is your thing, you can like us on there. Phil, final thoughts before we close our therapy session for the day?
Oh, just don't eat at Arby's this week.
Yeah, I hopefully we don't have to, but we may have no choice.
We may have to camp there.
Until next week, guys. See you, shells and balloons.